One of the other questions I got, and maybe I'll put this out to you, Ursula, has to do with when you introduce an anti-PD-1 antibody in the course of metastatic disease in these two scenarios with metastatic endometrial cancer. And right. Interestingly, almost half of the faculty would like to be able to use it up front. Of course, we'll talk about trials looking at that, Ursula. But any thoughts, you know, a patient maybe who's not that sick and, you know, really don't want to give them chemotherapy, you think it's rational to use first-line checkpoint inhibitor in somebody who's MSI high?
So I think that it's a good question. I think my colleagues, I concur with what we're saying. And I think that cancer genome atlas data was a game changer in terms of how we think about endometrial cancer. You know, really before that, it was more of a black box and it was more, you know, not as well-defined treatment. So I think certainly the MSI, the microsatellite status, instable, stable, is a very important triage point for patients. I think the other issue is looking at histology and then the grade. And that also kind of plays out in the Cancer Genome Atlas Project as well. I mean, I think the serous cancers all the way on the right are typically microsatellite stable and, you know, copy number high, analogous to ovary serous, but I think more, you know, more malignant and less chemotherapy sensitive. So I think in answer to some of those questions, certainly looking at the microsatellite status is critical, but it's also important to look at the histology and the grade. So for example, a patient has grade 1 endometrioid cancer that's metastasized to her lungs, you know, I'll certainly think about hormonal therapy for those patients. And she's got multiple choices, tamoxifen, megase combination, you know, alternating regimens, megase alone, you know, if she can't tolerate those things, an aromatase inhibitor. And I have patients who are on those drugs for years, and they have stable or shrinking lung metastases. So now I'm forgetting what your question was.
That's good stuff. But okay. Let me ask Krish.
That
very relevant stuff. But Krish, here's a specific issue. And this comes up in so many cancers. A patient, you know, where checkpoint inhibitors are being used, particularly in second or third line therapy, and people naturally want to try to use them earlier, go for a home run, get into a remission without having a lot of toxicity, although it's not likely, certainly, you know, possible. So the question is, Krish, are there situations, if you could do it, where you would give pembrolizumab first line to a patient with MSI metastatic endometrial cancer?
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, go ahead.
I think a very promising role for that is in a patient who has measurable disease after surgery. And that's exactly the way the GY018 trial was written for patients with newly diagnosed endometrial cancer. And so I would definitely want to get the drug for those patients in the front line.
So, and yeah, I'm not trying to push off-label use of any drug here. I'm just kind of thinking it through the way I know people in practice think through, you know, really how I might think it through if it were me or somebody in my family, you know, and again, this kind of issue is so difficult. Bladder cancer, we were talking about this the other day. Another issue I'm kind of curious about, we were talking about this, Dave, in a lung cancer program the other day, is the fact that pembrolizumab was just approved to be given every 6 weeks. So particularly timely because of the COVID crisis when people are trying to keep people out of the clinic and from infusions. But I was kind of surprised, and you kind of see it here, Dave. I figured everybody was going to just jump right on the every 6 weeks, and the lung people were giving me all kinds of issues that they were not so sure about in the beginning, maybe somebody who's on it for a long time. I was kind of surprised, but look, I understand when something's worked, you don't want to change it. Any thoughts about Q6 weeks Pembro, Dave?
So very timely with the current environment. I actually changed 4 patients today to every 6 weeks, but the reason I changed them today is because of the current environment and not because I'm overly confident that the every 6 week dosing is going to be just as well tolerated and have the exact same efficacy. The data across some tumor types looks like it is, but you know, we can save a visit to every 6 weeks and push those patients out, particularly patients who have been stable on single agent therapy. I think that's an opportunity. And that's an opportunity for us to save a couple of visits. And remember that we're only getting those labs every 6 weeks. So it actually saves 2 visits. And if you talk about an exam before, it saves three visits. So because of those reasons, in the current environment, I've switched over to every 6 weeks when it's doable. But we need some data. And, you know, with the original lack of approval for the 6 week dosing, it caused us all to raise our eyebrows. And then when they rethought that due to the COVID, we do think it should be an option.
Any comments on this, Chris? Julie Bramer from Hopkins, who's known for her work in toxicity, was bringing up the issue of using a higher dose in a patient just starting therapy. I mean, no, tangible concerns, just, maybe we ought to see how this goes. Any concerns about using Q6 weeks in a patient starting on Pembro, Chris?
I'm not sure. And I wanted to ask Dave if, this data that the FDA used to make this new stipulation and this option, remember, they're not recommending that we go to 400 Q6, but I think it was all pharmacokinetic data. I don't think there was any efficacy data or toxicology data associated with it. I think they based all of this just on pharmacokinetics, which is fine, but I think, it leaves a lot of open-ended questions that we need to have addressed. So I've not been pushing the Q6 week dose with our patients, but I do discuss it with them. I think part of the reason maybe we may have let our guard down a little bit out here in California because we haven't been hit as badly as we were anticipating being hit with the COVID-19 pandemic. But I think most of the data used for this decision was pharmacokinetic. And so efficacy and toxicology, that we just don't have that information.